I guess an entire civilization isn't going to die tonight. More important than that is to all the pro-Israel conservative right now, rubbing it in people's faces, people like me, that we were wrong and you were right. I want to congratulate you. I'm very happy for you that you get to feel that you were right and we were wrong. How foolish of us. And by the way, you knew it because you're clearly smarter. We erroneously thought Trump might do what he said he will do. But because you're smarter, you realize he's not going to do that. You've watched him promise to release the Epstein files and not do that. You've watched him say, we're going to do no more new wars. He didn't do that. So you caught on quicker because you're smarter. So congratulations to you. I'm very happy for you. Now, if you care to understand what our actual concern was, and my guess is you don't, but in case you do, let me share it with you. When President Trump said an entire civilization will die tonight unless, yeah, some of us thought that might happen because he said that was going to happen. Grateful that didn't happen. Secondarily, there was a concern that is still justified. The concern is this. We're going to end an entire civilization. They're all going to die tonight. Innocent people. That's very immoral. Yes, it's a war crime, all the things. Above man's law is God's law. That is a very immoral thing for anyone to say, even if they don't mean it. Now, just so you can better understand, imagine that you look over, you're at a coffee shop, and you see a man approach a woman. He's hitting on her, and he says something to her like, I'll rape you if you don't go out on a date with me. And you're like, what an incredibly terrible thing. And the guy next to you says, no, don't worry. He doesn't mean he's not actually going to do that. And you watch the lady say, yes, I'll go out on a date with you. You might have the decency to say, yeah, I guess that kind of tyrannical threat, that immoral threat is, it's just the wrong thing to do. If you didn't see it that way and you're like, no, that's actually a dating strategy. I use it myself. If you see it that way, agree to disagree. But in the hopes that I could offer an opportunity to understand our concerns, if you care to understand them, there is that analogy. So with that said, I'm going to close by saying I am not a Trump hater. I really support so much of what that man has done. I so admire what he's been through, the adversity that he's overcome. However, I like to call balls and strikes. If he does things I like, I'm going to say it as such. If he does things that I don't like, I will say it as such. There are three principal things he's done that I don't like. They're massive betrayals. Number one, he protected Epstein criminals, very objectively so. Number two, he started a war with Iran. Number three, you'll disagree, he sold out American interests to Israel. I really don't like President Trump's stances on those, his decisions, his actions. I will call balls and strikes. I see a lot of pro-Israel conservatives now all of a sudden seemingly not willing to call balls and strikes on President Trump. Seemingly 100% of everything he does, you happen to be in agreement with. Now, the odds of that being genuine are very low.
That's exactly right. That's the great J.P. Sears breaking down the absurdity of the argument in the way that only he can. On the other side, Lebanon John joins me with some exclusive information, the latest updates to the Middle East.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors, and that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition, that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts, this is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. So take action now at thealexjonesstore.com and look at these two new amazing lines.
The globalist agenda hour by hour. This is the War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Joining me now is my co-host on Moonbase Live, a show that we do occasionally. We should probably do one tonight, John. We probably have enough information to do one soon. You, of course, can follow us at Moonbase Live on X, and we're on Rumble Moonbase Live. Follow John on X at Lebanon John. He's been providing very thorough updates throughout the conflict between America and Iran, and he calls in today. Oh, I'm sorry, Lebanon underscore John. Lebanon underscore John on X. John, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
It's going all right. You tell me. Obviously, Israel was very mad at the ceasefire yesterday and took that anger out on Lebanon. Biggest bombing raid against Lebanon, killing upwards of 700 civilians, I think was the latest count I saw. What do you have for us about this?
Yes. So Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli government in general were not even at the table for this negotiation.
Right.
And so that's basically somewhat of a sign of what's going on, that Israel was not even invited to this negotiation, that Donald Trump's administration negotiated basically with Iran directly. And the Israelis had, like, on their television channels, a countdown for this massive proposed civilization-ending strike that they were going to participate in. And so they were preparing to participate in this massive assault, obviously based on American leadership and the American indication of a massive strike. So they had all their bombers lined up for a very large, sudden assault. Then the announcement of a ceasefire comes, and apparently the Israelis weren't involved in a negotiation at all. The rumors are that Bibi Netanyahu called President Donald Trump, and basically tells him, you know, what I'm going to guess, and I have a pretty good instinct on these sort of things. Basically, Bibi Netanyahu tells Trump, this isn't going to work. You know, I'm taking hits domestically in the politics of Israel. All my enemies have come out now and are like, basically, they went to town on Bibi Netanyahu in Israel like crazy. They said, you've humiliated us, you've degraded us. You know, the Iran war was basically our war. In the end, we've achieved nothing, and they didn't even have us at the negotiating table. And then our army's on the verge of collapse. Society's taking a bunch of damage. We've achieved nothing. And, you know, Bibi Netanyahu is a failure. And so after all this made the rounds in the Israeli media, Bibi calls Trump and basically says, I need a win. You know, this isn't going to work. And so then I guess Trump walks back the Lebanese front being part of the ceasefire, where Trump is now claiming, like, you know, that really wasn't part of the deal. You know, somehow, some way, really wasn't part of the deal. When, of course, everybody knows it was part of the deal. And so then what apparently happened is the Israeli assault that they had prepared for Iran, that they were locked and loaded, ready to go, and a sort of tantrum or fit of rage, and also for political expediency of Bibi Netanyahu, they unleashed that assault just on Lebanon instead. Now, they don't have military targets to hit in Lebanon. If they did, they would have already hit them. What would they be waiting for? So if they knew where some key figure was and he was just right there out in the open, they would have hit him. They would have hit him a long time ago. But nonetheless, they have to take the the news headlines away from Bibi Netanyahu's failures and create a different headline that, oh, Lebanon is suffering now because of Iran. Lebanon is suffering now because they dared to resist. And simultaneously, this is a gambit to divorce the front of Iran and Lebanon, because the Lebanese military operations against Israel have been relatively easy, with Iran taking a lot of the burden, with Iran occupying a lot of the defenses and intelligence forces, so that it allows the Lebanese operations to be easier. So actually, since October 7th until now, this last round of fighting has actually been easier for Lebanon, because Israel is preoccupied with the massive war going on with Iran. And so from the Israeli point of view, it would be very expedient if the Iranian front could be halted, at least temporarily, to then allow for all their intelligence and defensive capabilities to be focused only on the Lebanese front. And so it was an attempt to divorce the front. And so then they did a media campaign in Iran to say that your leaders are going to sacrifice your lives and ruin your chance of peace for the sake of a foreign country in Lebanon, to attempt to convince the Iranian people that it's not in their national interest to support Lebanon, that they should accept the ceasefire, leave Lebanon out, to sell Lebanon out, let Lebanon be focused on and destroyed individually. And so, okay, yeah, so that's basically a pretty good breakdown or rundown of, like, what America and Israel did up until this point. I haven't mentioned, you know, what Lebanon or Iran has decided to do or what their reaction is to this. But does that make sense up until this point?
Yeah, that does. And of course, for our television viewers, you see we've been playing B-roll of the attacks on Lebanon. All of these are from the last 24 hours or so, and you can see it is absolutely massive. Right now we're looking at, I believe that's Tyre, and you just see smoke across the entire city, just massive apartment blocks being blown up. I mean, this is indiscriminate terror bombing by Israel on Lebanon for, I guess, the crime of existing, I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's all I got. So what is Iran and Lebanon's response? And you're saying that basically the I guess, pro-peace faction is telling the Iranian people, or just straight up the Israelis are telling the Iranian people, hey, don't be suckers getting your country bombed for Lebanon. Let Lebanon go it alone so that you can, you know, get out of this conflict. But, I mean, it's not really up to Israel or even Lebanon, right? It's Iran. If Iran wants to, you know, include the Lebanese front in the ceasefire, they're the ones proposing it, right? So it's not like we have the ability to dictate terms to them. I mean, that isn't that what this is all about?
Yeah, what this is that Donald Trump, you know, is bluffing, like you said, with this civilization-ending threat. So if you consider that in the equation, Donald Trump believes in his, you know, art of the deal. To attain the upper hand, he has to go, you know, way over the top with some ridiculous demand, with some ridiculous threat, with some ridiculous claim. He has to come to the table with, you know, totally outrageous positions on purpose. So then he believes that gives him the upper hand. That's why he just continuously makes these ridiculous claims and ridiculous threats. Right. Now, the Iranian side is not playing a game. See, from Donald Trump's point of view, this is like a game. You see, he's like, oh, they put humans, civilians, around their power plants and on their bridges. What did he say? He said, quote, they're not allowed to do that.
Right.
Like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, there's rules. Like, we have to be, like, he's thinking that he can destroy the civilian infrastructure of Iran to make them die a slow, painful death back to the Stone Age, but the civilians themselves cannot use their bodies to prevent it, risking sudden death. No, they have to accept slowly dying. And that, and these are the rules, you see. So in his mind, it's like a game. So what we have here is a culture clash. He doesn't understand the culture of who he's dealing with. The Iranians have laid out 10 points that they insist be met. They're not bluffing. This isn't coming to the table with things that they don't really want. This isn't a fake posture of 10 demands that it's really just for show. No, these are the actual 10 demands. And if these 10 demands aren't met, the Strait of Hormuz is just not going to be open. And there really is no game in this. There's no posturing or guile behind it. So, you know, he has no idea the culture that he's dealing with. He's dealing with them like he has dealt with so many people in the past, like he's negotiating with the city of New York for property tax abatements or something. You know, this is not going to work. And so he's basically learning the hard way that they don't really care about the threats. The threats aren't working. They had little girls and grandmas on the bridge and on the power plant. So go ahead and bomb it. And they don't care. And it's a religious and nationalist country. So the Iranian people right now are saying that they're not falling for it, that everybody in Iran who's calling for a ceasefire is actually outing themselves as a foreign collaborator or betrayer of national interest. The public of Iran have gone into the streets and are demanding no ceasefire. The public are protesting to not accept ceasefire. The public of Iran are demanding a continuation of the war, and nobody is accepting to abandon Lebanon, because from their point of view, it's pretty obvious that this is a ruse, and once they eliminate the resistance in Lebanon, then they'll just come for Iran later. So why would they just let them be taken out one by one? It doesn't really make any sense. So the Iranians are going to fire in about 3 or 4 hours, maybe 4 or 5 hours. They're going to do a huge response against Israel. And if Israel continues to attack Lebanon, that's how it's going to continue to happen. Now, the military equation between Lebanon and Israel had no change based on these bombings. This had no effect. This is just killing civilians. They are not able to target Hezbollah like this. Hezbollah is underground in hardened positions. And the Israeli invasion has been basically a failure. So to summarize, to really get to the heart of the issue here, what you have to understand is that Bibi Netanyahu uses violence. Bibi Netanyahu uses war for political gains. He's not a warrior. He's not a soldier-type person. He's a politician. His mind thinks politically. He uses war for politics. So the bombing today is to save his political career. It's not for a military objective. That's just not how his mind works. He never used war for the purpose of actually winning a war or achieving military objectives. Like, it's been forever since this guy has achieved any actual, you know, military objectives. He uses, you know, subterfuge and things like that. So he uses betrayals, he uses, you know, blackmail, bribes, assassinations, these kind of things. He's not thinking like, I'm going to conquer this land and fortify it and I'm going to hold it. Well, he really can't. And in the case of Lebanon, he just simply can't. It's not physically possible. And so the bombing of Lebanon is just terrorism. It's just an act of rage. It's a political expediency move. It helps Bibi Netanyahu look strong. And he apparently overpowered Donald Trump, because the ceasefire did include Lebanon. Then Bibi Netanyahu called Trump, and Trump changed his tune. Trump changed his tune at the request of Bibi Netanyahu. It's pretty much cut and dry. I mean, there really is no doubt about this. So now the whole ceasefire has blown up because they cannot accept not bombing Lebanon, because it would be too embarrassing for Bibi Netanyahu in specific. It is specifically Bibi Netanyahu's career that is causing all of this. And the Lebanese public now, this is kind of dark what I'm about to say. You know, I hope no one gets offended by this. I'm just reporting this. I'm just reporting, okay? Don't get mad at me. I'm just reporting. The Lebanese public now has said that they are demanding that the resistance in Lebanon attack Israel in kind. And you see, it's very anti-Semitic and hateful of me to say that Israel should be treated how they treat others. Didn't you know that? It's downright evil of me to say that. But the resistance in Lebanon is now saying that they're tired of Hezbollah primarily attacking or exclusively attacking, whatever you want to say, military targets. They're tired of it. They're actually requesting that Hezbollah start attacking civilians because of how much suffering the civilians of Lebanon are being put under intentionally by Israel. Now, is Hezbollah going to listen to this? Probably not. Probably not. Hezbollah is probably not going to just try to kill hundreds of civilians in one day. They don't really do that. They don't. I mean, that it's frankly a waste of missiles, because what is the military objective there? What is the point of that? Israel doesn't pay for their missiles. So I guess they don't care, but if you're making your missiles underground and you don't have that many, it's probably not smart to just waste them on random people. I mean, kind of is.
Well, and of course, that is you know, shocking to hear to people who are convinced that Hezbollah, like Iran, are just insane, you know, Islamic extremist terrorists, that their whole goal is to kill as many people as they want. In reality, if you look at what they've been doing, I mean, I've been sort of shocked at how hesitant, how reticent Hezbollah has been to, you know, really launch attacks full force. I mean, ever since October 7th, I was expecting, all right, Hezbollah is going to get really involved in a big way. And they're always very sort of circumspect. They're always very careful about where they actually use force. Again, you can see that as a compliment or otherwise. It's just the fact on the ground. And when you look at the facts on the ground, you see that they are not trying or, you know, even accidentally killing hundreds of people in Israel in the way that Israel is killing people in Lebanon. From the Metro, this is the headline. Scenes of devastation after Israel bombs Lebanon 100 times in 10 minutes. So when you're talking about, you know, rage-filled terror bombing, 100 bombings in 10 minutes all over Lebanon with no strategic goal or value whatsoever.
No, it's like a mall, an apartment complex, a pharmacy. It's just literally random spots. I mean, they have no targets. If they had targets, they would have bombed them yesterday, before yesterday, before yesterday. They have no target. They don't know what to bomb. It's a cram-packed, very dense country. And it's full of people of different confessions and different backgrounds. And the population, one-third of the population, supplies their young men into Hezbollah. So what they would like to do is give it the Gaza treatment, where they want to attack the population base that supplies the fighters. They're thinking, you know, to exterminate the root of the issue. But the problem is, this isn't Gaza. You know, this is a huge number of people. It's a much bigger country. They're spread out over a much bigger area, and they would need a lot more bombs. And the Gaza treatment was not an efficient use of bombs. That was not a cost-effective method of flattening an area. It wasted a lot of bombs. And that's why people like Lindsey Graham, they say, well, why don't you just nuke the whole area? Well, he's saying that because that would be a lot more effective. The problem is, that would just kill a bunch of random people in Lebanon, which would bring a huge international outcry, specifically in the form of, you know, Russia and China. Russia and China have specifically warned Israel about going too far using nuclear weapons against civilians. And there are definitely madmen in Israel who would have no problem with that. I mean, how many times have we heard since 9/11, just glass the whole Middle East? That's a very common sentiment. But, you know, the Iranians, what they're saying, and I just spoke to people in Iran in a space a couple hours ago, people in Iran, actual Iranians, they're saying that it's a new dawn. It's over. They're not even going to listen to any attempt of a ceasefire moving forward. The Strait of Hormuz is not going to be opened no matter what. And if the energy infrastructure of Iran is hit, the energy infrastructure of all the countries that are being used to facilitate the war on Iran will be absolutely destroyed. They're going to turn the lights off. And they said not one drop of oil is going to move through this region. So the Iranians are basically saying, do your worst. I mean, they're done. Like I said, it's a culture clash. When you're studying war, you have to study the culture of your opponent. And they obviously do not comprehend, Donald Trump does not comprehend the culture of the Iranians. He has made the hardliners take power 100%. As you and Alex Jones have been saying, these actions have emboldened and empowered the hardliners of Iran, right? I mean, it's common sense. Everybody would know that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, you know, whether it's the 10-point plan or just, you know, common sense and what is even possible at this point, I mean, we are in a worse position now than we were before the war. Even if all you're talking about is the Strait of Hormuz, you know, you're talking about now the Strait of Hormuz, which was free, 40 days ago. Best case scenario now is it becomes a cash cow for Iran, where they're raking in something like $500 billion a year by taxing, toll gate, basically, for the Strait of Hormuz. So this has been an unmitigated disaster, in my opinion. We have about 4 minutes left here. Where does it go from here, John? What do you think is next? How do you think Israel responds to this? How do you think Iran responds to Israel's outrages in Lebanon?
The classic Donald Trump, MO is now he's going to have to come up with some other super ridiculous over the top threat. He really has no other method of operation. That's all he does. And so he's going to let it cool down for a little bit. so that the next threat could be really believable. He has to have some teeth on it. He has to, and this is how Donald Trump thinks. I'm not saying this is smart. I'm not saying this is going to work. I'm just saying this is the only way he knows how to operate. So he's going to try to come up with some threat, some super dramatic thing that's absolutely horrible that he doesn't actually even want to do, and he has to make it believable. And then he's going to try to, you know, it's not going to work. I mean, that ship has sailed. In other words, it depends. Do we want to actually solve the problem, or do we want to just have a long, drawn-out war? If you want to solve the problem, you know, Bibi Netanyahu is you know, his career has to come to an end.
Yeah.
That's if you want to solve the problem. If you want the problem to keep going, it's just going to be more of the same.
That's what I was, you know, I was wondering, like, what do you think the likelihood is that, like, you know, Joe Kent, a lot of others are out saying, you know, if you want this peace deal, ceasefire, anything to last, you got to restrain Israel. Obviously, Trump is no interest in trying to restrain Israel, but if Israel is bombing the hell out of Lebanon and that's putting our ceasefire in danger, I mean, what, you know, how do things have to lie to where we are in a way forced to restrain Israel? And would we even do that? Like, what do you think of that potentiality?
Restraining Israel is a strange thing because we're the ones who created and funded and enabled, well, the deep state of the United States. It, you know, it's not really the public of the United States. So it would be counterintuitive. It would be like a self-restricting at that point. So it would be an act at the end of the day. It would be nothing but theatrics. It's not real because as soon as the tables turned, they would then enable Israel right back. And so, you know, the chances of de-escalation are quickly disappearing. The latest treachery, I mean, you know, it was hard enough to get Iran to negotiate and then to mess it up again. I mean, it's almost like unbelievable how bad they are at getting things done properly. So it was hard enough to persuade them to negotiate again. Clearly, one of the points of the negotiation, I mean, the mediator tweeted out, effective immediately, there's a truce, including Lebanon. And then now Donald Trump is saying, and J.D. Vance, by the way, just came out and said, oh, it's just a misunderstanding. See, they thought Lebanon was part of the ceasefire, but we never guaranteed anything about Lebanon. Well, probably they should have brought Israel to the negotiating table because it's Israel that's attacking Lebanon. So if Israel is not at the negotiating table, how can they promise that that Israel won't attack Lebanon without even including Israel at the negotiating table? So in one respect, the Israelis have a point. They weren't even asked. They weren't even there. They didn't promise that. That's a good point. But why did the United States promise that then? The United States is supposed to be able to control Israel, but they don't. They can't. They apparently do not control Israel. And so Donald Trump has embarrassed himself and us yet again because he agreed to a deal and then Israel made him change his mind on a key part of the deal, which blew up the whole deal. That's what happened. Flat out in public. There's no denying it. This is what happened. They agreed to a deal that had no attacking. And again, they can attack Lebanon all they want because everyone needs to understand. Iran pays to rebuild all those houses that are blown up. They did it three times already. So blowing up all these houses and blowing up all these shops, it's just terrorism. There's no military strategic gain. Iran is going to pay to rebuild all that. Iran spends billions of dollars to rebuild stuff in Lebanon all the time. And they're going to do it again. When this is over and they put a tax on the Strait of Hormuz,
the money's going to come rolling in. Well, thank you very much for the update. That's Lebanon John. Follow him on X at @Lebanon_John. That's @Lebanon_John. We, of course, do the Moonbase Live. Follow us on Rumble. And we may do an episode tonight if you're lucky.
Everything I sell to you works. Obviously, that's the goal. So that you get it and you like it and you want to get it again. Everything I sell to you, we put deep research into and I personally use. Now, I've been promoting zeolites for decades with great sponsors because they really work. I'm going to tell you what they are. Well, Bigley, our sponsor, has a really high-quality, private-label, top-selling brand that we were able to private-label we're bringing to you right now. With the unprecedented toxins in the environment, with the chemtrailing, all the garbage in the food, it is more important than ever to take zeolites on a regular basis. But not all zeolites are created equal. This is really a high-quality zeolite. Please do your own research and then go to the oliveshowstore.com and secure our high-quality zeolite formula. Now let's go over just some of the incredible facts. We're swimming in toxins every single day. Metals from the air, chemicals in the food and water. Your body needs help binding, eliminating this garbage before it builds up and destroys your cells. Enter Zeolite Detox Defense, advanced binding agent. This isn't some gimmick. Zeolite is a naturally occurring volcanic mineral with a unique cage-like crystalline structure that acts like a molecular trap. Through ion exchange and absorption, it selectively grabs positively charged toxins, heavy metals, ammonia, and other unwanted compounds while letting beneficial minerals stay put. Then it escorts them straight out of your system through your gut. Paired with folic acid, it also supports healthy mineral transport and cleaner internal environment. Users report feeling lighter, more balanced, and clear-headed with consistent daily use. Just one dose a day gives you 60 full servings of detox support. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't steer you wrong. You know that. If you love our methylene blue, if you love our bolivine colostrum, if you love the other incredible products like our T3 iodine, you are going to love this Zeolite Detox Formula. Secure yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you haven't checked out the other supplements like our methylene red that's proprietary to us, our ultramethylene blue that is on record the strongest and the best, then check it out today. And while you're there, check out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, you name it, to spread the word of freedom in America and worldwide. Bottom line, thanks for keeping us on the air over the years. We're facing some of the biggest challenges ever to stay on the air. But thanks to you standing with us as our partners, the InfoWar, we are stronger than ever. So thank you so much for your support. Now please visit thealexjonesstore.com today. And if you want to get massive discounts on all the supplements, sign up as a subscriber, lock in your orders in the future. You can cancel any time, so all you're really locking in is the massive discounts. Same thing with VIPs, cancel any time, $30 a month, get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, special sales on everything. So if you're buying anything at thealexjonesstore.com, you should be a VIP. Thank you so much for your support. Now secure your Zeolite formula now at thealexjonesstore.com. I know you're the big health guy. You're way better shape than I am. Don't kick my ass. I've seen you working out with the Liver King. You say you've taken methylene blue before. I want you to take our medical grade. It takes 30 minutes to kick in. So good for your body. I'd like you to drink this, Jay. You said earlier, what? I appreciate it. I want to get your true review. If it doesn't work, tell me. Here it is, brother. Looks just like the stuff from Dune, the water of life. He's drinking the juice of a strangled, drowned sandworm right now. Baron Harkonnen is not happy. We're going to see what happens.
20 minutes later.
I feel like my brain is clearer and working faster. It feels like my brain and my energy have had the accelerator hit on them. I felt it in my brain and my energy.
Well,
I'm going to get me some before I leave.
We're going to give you a couple bottles of it, bro. We love it. It's amazing. Get yours now, thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. We've got some updates to the supposed ceasefire in Iran. I'm going to bring you those. In the next hour, I'm going to get into the history, the 39-day history of the war in Iran with a bunch of videos illustrating exactly what we're talking about, because you forget. It wasn't that long ago, but I forgot. I mean, when you got Trump issuing threats to, you know, eradicate all of the civilian infrastructure in Iran like four or five times over a month, they all kind of blend together. We'll lay it out for you, the full timeline, but let's get to what has actually happened so far. I think we got a couple tweets here that I think lay it out as fully as you could hope. This is from Crunchy Rugger on X. Trump, do as I say or I will bomb you back to the Stone Ages. Iran responds, best I can do is this 10-point plan where you give us everything we want. Trump, deal. Fox News, Trump is a master negotiator. I mean, that is how it went. This is the very confusing thing about all of this. Donald Trump said, we're going to bomb you back to the Stone Age. We're going to eradicate your civilization unless you open the Strait of Hormuz. Iran didn't open the Strait of Hormuz. Trump backed down. There is no other way to spin that other than they called his bluff. Be mad at me all you want. That's just, what else is it? What else is it? Strait of Hormuz is not open. So what are we talking about? And the ceasefire 10-point agreement that they supposedly agreed to, they never actually agreed to it. It was always just an excuse to act like they weren't having their bluff called. Saying, oh, okay, they came to us with this agreement, so we'll give it 2 weeks. We'll delay for 2 weeks so we can look at this proposal. Knowing that they were probably not going to accept the proposal, but it was a nice excuse to back down from his horrifying threat. So, again, call that whatever you want. That's a bluff being called. Okay? Because this 10-point agreement that Iran put forward is literally just a checklist of everything that they want. And if Trump were to agree to it just outright, like they sort of hinted that they would, it would be extremely surprising. Extremely surprising. Now, the contention right now is that Israel says Lebanon was never a part of the ceasefire agreement. Trump now says it was never a part of the agreement. J.D. Vance now says it was never a part of the agreement. However, if you look at the original statement from the Pakistan prime minister who helped to bring about this conclusion, he said very straightforward, with the greatest humility, I'm pleased to announce that the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States of America, along with their allies, have agreed to an immediate ceasefire everywhere, including Lebanon and elsewhere, effective immediately. I mean, that was in the original announcement. It didn't say just like, it's not like it would be different if it was just saying, you know, and allies, and you could say, well, they didn't explicitly say, no, they explicitly said Lebanon. So it obviously was a part of the original ceasefire agreement that they immediately broke. And so Iran said, okay, then the Strait of Hormuz is closed. So at this moment, the Strait of Hormuz is closed as of now. Okay. And there's the actual original tweet that I read yesterday. It was the first tweet about any of this. So that's just not true that Lebanon wasn't a part of it. It was supposed to be part of it. And obviously if Iran, you know, temporarily closed or opened the Strait of Hormuz on the assumption that the ceasefire provisions were agreed to, then that means that we probably did agree to them. We just didn't intend to ever actually stick to them, which again is eminently predictable. J.D. Vance has made a couple statements to the press recently. Let's go to the latest one. Here he is outside of Air Force One, where he talks about the 10-point proposal that we supposedly accepted yesterday.
About Iran, sir. So let me just say, given that you guys are going to ask about Iran, let me just say a few things, actually. So, number one, I think it's very important for the American media to be honest with the American people on this particular issue, because it affects not just, you know, the normal issues of public policy. It actually affects peace and war. And here's what I mean. So in the past couple of days, I've seen a lot of reporting from the American media about the 10-point proposal that the Iranians have made. Now, as I know, because I've been involved in this, there are three different 10-point proposals, at least, that I've seen floating around. The first 10-point proposal was something that was submitted, and we think, frankly, was probably written by ChatGPT, that was submitted to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner. That immediately went in the garbage and was rejected. There was a second 10-point proposal that was much more reasonable, that was based on some back and forth between us, between the Pakistanis and Iranians. That is the 10-point proposal that the president was referencing in his truth yesterday. And then, frankly, I've seen a third 10-point proposal that's even more maximalist than the first 10-point proposal that's been floating around various social media channels. Now, here's what's interesting about all this, is that I've seen various organs, the New York Times, CNN, others, pick up and run the original 10-point proposal based on little more than a random Yahoo in Iran submitting it to public access television in the country of Iran, and then them saying that somehow represents the negotiating position of the government. It's the equivalent of somebody in, let's say, a Democratic councilman in Boise, Idaho, saying something crazy, the local public access TV picking up that crazy.
I'm sorry. I just don't believe him. So then what was the ceasefire yesterday? I mean, the ceasefire yesterday was about this 10-point proposal. That's what kept being said. He's saying there's some other 10-point proposal. Trump is saying there's like even more. He's like, I don't even know what a list is. It's like, so what was the 10-point proposal? I mean, it's been acknowledged. And again, it's like, all, you know, all these mainstream headlines about it. What is Iran's 10-point proposal and how does it compare to U.S. demands? Iran publicly released on Wednesday what it said was the 10-point framework for talks that President Trump described as a, quote, workable basis on which to negotiate and into the war. I mean, so Iran released it. Trump said it was workable and that this is where they'd be, you know, basing it, you know, what they'd be basing it off of. So where's the misinformation? What are we talking about here? Much of it consisted of maximalist demands that look difficult, if not impossible, to reconcile with U.S. aims. A White House official said the points do not match what Mr. Trump was referring to. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss internal White House discussions. Iran released its version of the proposal the morning after the United States and Iran agreed to a two-week ceasefire and calls for American troops to leave the region, reasserts Iran's control over strategic Strait of Hormuz, and maintains Iran's right to nuclear enrichment. But it was Iran who released the version. I don't know what he's talking about. Some local access thing. Not what happened. Trump said, we've agreed to a 10-point proposal. The next day, Iran published the proposal saying this is what Trump is referencing. So I just don't believe J.D. Vance, which is ironic because he starts that video saying, you know, the media really has to be honest about this. Well, then what's the 10-point plan that you agreed to? Because apparently there was a short-lived ceasefire based on a 10-point plan. You know, you're not going to provide that to us. Then this is all we have to go on. And as far as I can tell, this is the 10-point plan. It's just that they were lying about agreeing to it. I think that's what actually happened here, is that they were looking for an off-ramp. They were looking for a way out of looking like chumps by not fulfilling the ultimatum that they put forward. And so they said, okay, well, just say we agree to the 10-point plan as a basis. Don't say we agree to it. Say we agree to it as a basis for talks, and then we'll just walk it back tomorrow. Like, I think that's actually what happened. They never intended to stick to these 10-point plan. Now they're muddying the water to try to pretend like this wasn't even the plan they looked at. How could it not be? What other plan were you looking at? Again, the announcements from the official Iran channel say it. The announcements from the Pakistani official channels who brokered the deal said it. The mainstream media on every side says it. And your way to say that they're all wrong is just to say, we don't even know what you're looking at. There's like three different lists and we don't even know which one we're suggesting. It's like, well, this doesn't even make sense. So we can look at the 10-point proposal and see that it is a maximalist wish list, if that's how you want to put it. This is Iran's 10-point plan, which Donald Trump says is a workable basis for negotiation. This is from Liam McCollum today. I don't know, but this looks like strategic defeat to me. Am I supposed to consider this a victory when this was the predictable outcome and the war should have never happened in the first place? Don't get me wrong. I'll take any off-ramp, but the U.S. objectively is worse off after this. Donald Trump can turn this into a strategic victory only if he finally follows Reagan's footsteps and tells the Israelis they're cut off if they break the ceasefire and continue the war. Here's the 10-point peace plan. One, guarantees that Iran will not be attacked again. Two, a permanent end to the war, not just a ceasefire. Three, end to Israeli strikes on Lebanon. Again, third point in this list that we apparently agreed to. Four, lifting all U.S. sanctions on Iran. Five, an end to all regional fighting against Iranian allies. So that, of course, means Lebanon and Syria and all these other places. I guess not Syria anymore. Iran would reopen the Strait of Hormuz. This would be the only thing that would be beneficial to us, or like, you know, correspond with our war goals, except Iran would impose a $2 million fee per ship transmitting Hormuz. Iran would split the fees with Oman. Iran would establish rules for safe passage through the Hormuz Strait, and Iran would use these fees for reconstruction later instead of reparations. It's actually not a bad deal if we wanted to take it. I mean, we do end up worse off, but Why don't we become allies with Iran? Why don't we work with Iran since they are actually better than Israel in like every different way you could possibly imagine? I don't know. Well, I do know. I'm not allowed to say. I mean, I am allowed. It's the Jewish control of America. I should just say it. That's why. Because really, why would, you know, why are we enemies with Iran? It genuinely doesn't make any sense. If you want to tell me it's because they're extremist Muslim, then why are we friends with Saudi Arabia? You can't have it both ways, okay? If we're enemies with Iran because of their intractable religious extremism, then it just doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. Saudi Arabia is literally more extremist Muslim, more, you know, traditional, hardcore conservative Muslim. Right, here's Fox and Friends laying out the Iranian proposed peace plan with Mark Levin getting so angry at it. They never intended to stick to this. It was just the excuse they needed to not look like they were chickening out. And they were chickening, and I'm glad he chickened out. Again, it's like you say that Trump chickened out or Trump backed down. It's like he did. I'm glad he did. He never should have made the threat in the first place. But he did back down. Keith Woods, at Keith Woods YT on X, points out what a stupid thing this would be if these are actually agreed to. Iran in 2016 had a nuclear program that was constrained, extensive international monitoring. The Strait of Hormuz was open with record low oil prices, 1 year breakout time to nukes, no military conflict, reformers growing politically. Now, of course, was in the wake of the JCPOA, the nuclear agreement Obama signed. Now, after two Trump terms, control of the Strait of Hormuz is in Iran's hand. There's no guarantee on nuclear enrichment, reduced international inspections, a shorter breakout time. U.S. THAAD systems in the region have been destroyed and missile defenses depleted. Ayatollah Khomeini has been replaced by Ayatollah Khomeini. Huge propaganda win for the regime with reformers undermined. I'm sure Trump supporters will look back and think this was definitely worth spending $200 billion and all that political capital on just before the all-important midterm elections. Yeah, I'm sure. So again, for people like actually celebrating this like a victory, it's just crazy. It really is inexplicable to me how you could be considering this a victory at all. But of course, it really doesn't matter. Then the thing you need to understand is we're real human beings that actually care about the world and have positions independent of political considerations, positions like we shouldn't murder children, you know, those types of positions that are for some reason lacking on for a lot of people on the right. But the thing is, imagine two different timelines. Imagine the timeline where Trump backs down, gets the concession, which he didn't actually get, but the timeline we're in right now, right? We're in one timeline in which Trump didn't fulfill his threat. Now imagine the timeline where Trump did fulfill his threat, and we are living in a world today where Iran has been utterly brutalized, million people dead, like, you know, whatever he was planning on doing with his civilizational ending attack. Would the Trump supporters sound any different today? I would, right? I would be pissed off. I'd be disheartened. I'd be horrified by what we'd done. I'd be sitting here saying, I can't believe Trump actually did this. He's a monster. Like, I would have been in a very different mood today. I'm relieved. I'm happy it's going this way. I'm also just pissed off it's still going on. But it'd be very different if things had gone differently. Now, for the Trump sicko fans, they're more like NPCs where they're going to be happy no matter what. Trump backs off. Trump doesn't back off. They have the same tweet ready and rearing to go. Hit send, right? Wow, Trump's amazing. He did it. Incredible. Take that, panickins. You didn't think it was possible. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. No matter what the outcome is, they're going to say the exact same thing. Because no matter what happens, they're going to pretend it was a success from Trump. They're going to pretend that it was him winning. They're going to pretend that, you know, we're all dumb for not wanting him to do this crazy crap. Trump is not threatening to annihilate the Iranian people. He's warning the radical regime to reopen the Strait of Hormuz by 8 p.m. or face total destruction of its power plants, bridges, and infrastructures that have enabled 47 years of extortion and terror. He literally said, I don't want that to happen. Okay. Yeah, okay. Great point, Greg. 3 points to watch out for is from Mario Nafal. One, if the U.S. keeps claiming that Lebanon was never part of the ceasefire deal, it means Netanyahu is calling the shots. True. Two, if Iran doesn't attack Israel as promised, then they abandon Hezbollah, Lebanon is screwed, and Iran is much weaker than it seems. Three, if Iran does end up controlling the Strait of Hormuz and is able to charge a toll booth fee, it means they won the war and Trump abandoned the Gulf to end the war. For the next 24 hours, all eyes are on one or two. That's interesting. I think that's true. I don't think they are going to abandon Hezbollah again because it's not the strategic thing to do. It would be silly, just like Lebanon John laid out. You're just going to let them eradicate you one by one? That doesn't make any sense. From pro underscore trading on X, if Iran is able to charge $2 million per tanker, they're going to make around $280 million a day. That's $500 billion in 5 years. For comparison, the Obama administration gave Iran $1.7 billion in cash. Not great, guys. Not great. Of course, I don't think Obama ever gave Iran pallets of cash. What happened was we seized Iranian money that we then returned to them as part of the deal. It was always their money. Okay. Just clarify that as I have for the entire time I've been on air. But that may be the way to approach this is clearly this ceasefire that doesn't actually exist was very disfavored by Israel, but Iran, they're out there cheering and waving flags and celebrating. So I guess if you actually are in favor of the ceasefire, you're kind of on Iran's side. So I guess everybody that is glad that Trump took the ceasefire, you're kind of all anti-Semitic Muslims now. So you're all leftist. You're all AOC. All right. You're all, you love the mullahs and you're all secretly Muslim and leftist. So that's just how it is. I don't make the rules, but clearly if you were mad about Obama giving Iran, you know, $1.7 billion, you're probably really mad at Trump giving them $500 billion over 5 years, huh? That probably wasn't a smart idea. But nothing actually is consistent. So it doesn't actually matter. So it doesn't actually matter to these people. It matters to me. Let's go to clip number 9 here, because this is the Israeli opposition leader, Yair Lapid. And here's what he thinks about Netanyahu and the ceasefire and everything. Let's watch. He says, citizens of Israel, in a few hours or a day or two or whenever he feels it's possible to come out of the bunker, Benjamin Netanyahu will appear before the state of Israel and try to sell you that the campaign in Iran was a success. That would be a complete lie. The army did an amazing job, the best air force in the world, did everything they asked of it. And more. The people of Israel showed national resilience and determination. We have inflicted severe damage on Iran precisely because of this. The complete failure is even more striking. What happened here is a political disaster on a scale I can't remember. I was prime minister. I was foreign minister. I don't remember such a political breakdown. It has become clear that military power without a political plan does not lead victory. Netanyahu led us to an equally strategic collapse. There was a blasphemous combination of arrogance, irresponsibility, lack of planning, faulty meter work, zero care in home front, lies that were sold to the Americans and damaged trust between the two countries, a military success that turned into a political disaster. He's not happy. He's not very happy about it. Which makes me happy. You understand why he's mad, though. You understand that if you've been watching this show, if you watch the Eight Front War, if you watch Benjamin Netanyahu's statements a couple weeks ago, you know that Israel has staked everything on this gamble. That to them, it was worth it to sacrifice their future, which is exactly what they did. They knew exactly how unpopular they would become in America, a place that they rely on support. That's fine. It's all worth it if they can take out Iran. That's why he's so mad. That's why this is unacceptable. That's why he's calling this the biggest political disaster. It's because they know that if they don't keep pushing, if they don't keep driving, if they don't fully and once and for all destroy Iran to the point that it's a failed state, then they are screwed. I've said it a million times. Might not be this year, might not be in 5 years, but in 10 or 20 years, Israel is going to be hated by the vast majority of the people in the world. They're already disliked more than they're liked by people here in America, meaning that we're going to start voting with that in mind, meaning we're going to elect people that don't like Israel, meaning they're going to get cut off from our funds, meaning they're going to die because they can't survive without us. That's the gamble that they've made. So it ain't over by a long shot. They're not going to let the war with Iran end. And if it requires them assassinating Donald Trump or setting off a miniaturized nuke in an American city, they'll do it because they have gambled everything on this. And there's no ends to which they will not go to achieve their goals. We are in a very dangerous situation right now. And it, you know, Trump needs to stand up to them. He needs to show that he is, in fact, the president of the United States and assert our authority over Israel for their own sake. But will he do it? I would give anything to be a part of the discussions going on right now at those higher levels. I'm not sure what exactly is being discussed, but I could very easily see a situation where Trump and J.D. Vance are like forced to capitulate to Israel because Israel, they know that Israel will like actually kill a bunch of Americans. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but 60% of Americans now have an unfavorable view of Israel. That's up from 53% last year and 42% in 2022, that is. In both political parties, a majority of adults under age 50 view Israel negatively, with 84% of Democrats and 57% of Republicans in the youth bracket. But clearly the trend is down, unfavorable is up, and that's going to continue. And it is a generational divide. So the longer time goes on, the more and more that gap widens, the less and less America supports Israel. This is what they're really afraid of. This is the timetable that they're racing against. They don't have an infinite amount of time. They have right now to achieve this goal. That's why they're going so insane. That's why this whole Iran war has been chaotic. I'm going to do the timeline in the next hour for you. It's all about trying to desperately, frantically get this done because they have set themselves a deadline. So we are in Israeli false flag territory to a very high degree right now, and we'll see how all this plays out. We're going to go back in time and just, you know, give you a trip through the last 40 days here in the next hour. We'll be back on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
Let me do this. The folks at Bigley, about 7-8 months ago, came out with this top-of-the-line Faraday cage backpack with all these special pockets, super high quality. I'd previously bought a bag for myself personally like this, similar brand, for $500. The problem was they only got 500 of these. Well, guess what? They got a couple thousand of them finally in. It took 7-8 months. It's a $600 value, just the bag, for $249. But guess what comes in it? America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife. It's badass. America First T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Supplements, Shilajit Gummy, Shilajit Capsules, Irish Sea Moss Capsules, Warcry premium product, and more. And VIP members get it for $199. Also, as you can now read in the newspapers, the Texas receiver is saying he's not going to pay the rent or the bills. So you ask, when are we going to be shut down? Tomorrow? 2 weeks from now? I'm going to just wait till the lights turn off, okay? You'll probably see InfoWars go down the site. You see streaming shut down once we can't do it. We have the All Shows Network built at Bigley Owns, and I'm going to go over and do it there. But I'm going to ride this horse till it dies. I'm going to ride this race car till the engine blows or the wheels come off. Or I crash into the embankment. I ain't giving up. I'm riding this horse till I win or I lose. And then the media's like, oh, he's finally going to lose. Oh, yeah, all right. I am the InfoWar. Our listeners are the InfoWar. And we got a whole line. Here's the first one of a limited edition Veterans of the InfoWar t-shirts. Look at this. This is badass, and it's the troops on Iwo Jima raising the American flag with the InfoWars patch where the stars are. InfoWars lives forever. It is an amazing limited edition shirt. Look at that bad boy. And it funds this operation, but also the Alex Jones Network to keep us on the air. We need funds. We want to get more reporters back and expand, but we need your support. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.